ours will be forever the method.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's chicken.
This episode of the Vitaling Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have kind of a special show. We had a real icon in the industry pass away last week. His name was Bob Gruskin, and for those of you familiar with bodybuilding in the 1980s, 1970s, Bob Gruskin was kind of a bodybuilding coach, guru. He lived out in New York. And he helped a lot of champions, especially the guys who went into the AAU. A lot of AAU Mr. America winners were coached by Bob Gruskin. And Bob often helped these guys right when they were teenagers and they started competing and he saw the potential in them. And he would just help them out. He would take them to competitions. He would help them with their posing. He would help them with their diet. He would help them with their training. And all for no cost. He never was a contest prep coach like they have today. He was just a guy who befriended all these young men and really made a difference in their lives. And Bob passed away last Tuesday on the 14th. I think he was 83 years old. I believe it was from the coronavirus that we're all going through right now. I'm not really sure, but I think he hurt himself. He fell down, maybe hurt his hip. And because of his age, he was put in a nursing facility, an old person's home. And he caught the virus there, and then he passed away. So, unfortunately, a real bad loss to the bodybuilding industry. So, I had an idea to talk to some of these great champions that he helped. And Dave Palumbo also had that idea last week, and Dave beat me to the punch last week, and he put it up on YouTube. I think he interviewed Jerry Scalise and John DeFendis and Jeff King and Matt Dufresne and, of course, Chris Aceto, who's always on Dave's show. So I had the same idea. I reached out to John DeFendis also. John was a big competitor in the New York area during his teenage years. Of course, we had him on our show before. He was trained under Steve Mihalik, who was Mr. America in 1972. And John also was very much influenced by Bob Gruskin. So John went on to win the 1988 MPC USA Overall Championship and then turned professional. So we had John on our conversation talking about Bob Gruskin. I was also able to get Jerry Scalise back. I've had Jerry on our show before. Jerry was another great competitor in the New York area, great teenage competitor, and then he went on to win his class at the NABBA Mr. Universe back in 1987. I believe he also won the NABBA World Championships in the short class. So we had Jerry on the show. We had Tom Terwilliger also today on the show with us. Tom was an IFBB professional. He lives in Colorado right now, but he grew up in New York. And he was another disciple of Bob Gruskin. And then we had Richard Pelletano. Richard was another really good competitor when he was younger and a real good friend of Bob's. And Bob actually told Richard to give up bodybuilding. He was getting ready for the Mr. America contest in 1990. And Richard got a call from the police department. He had applied for a job with the police department. And they said they wanted him to start at the academy. But he would have to give up the Mr. America contest in order to do that. So Bob told him to do that, to just go after his career and leave bodybuilding behind. So anyways, we were able to do a call with all four guys at the same time. So I also have this interview up on YouTube if you want to go to YouTube and see what the guys look like, because we did it on Zoom and you'll be able to see everybody. But if you're a fan of the podcast, of course, you can listen right now to our interview with Tom Terwilliger, John DeFendis, Jerry Scalise, and Richard Pelletano, where they all talk about Bob Gruskin and what a great man he was and the influence that they had on him in their careers from when they were young men all the way up until today. As you'll see in this interview, they really, really fondly remember Bob, and he really was one of a kind. This was old school. This is how it was done back in the day. Not like it's done today, unfortunately, but Bob was a really, really special individual. I never really even realized it growing up in Chicago how special Bob was to all these guys. I, of course, heard about Bob when I was a teenager because we used to always see these guys come out from the East Coast, and they all had the same look. They all had this really sharp, full look to their muscles, whether it was Joe Meeko, who won the 1984 Mr. America, or Jeff King, who won the year before Joe Meeko did in 1983, Matt Dufresne, Victor Terra. The list goes on and on. John DeFendis, of course, Tom Terwilliger. And the list just goes on and on and on, and all the champions that Bob Gruskin helped. And you knew when Bob Gruskin was helping these guys, it was going to be tough to beat these guys. And these guys were national level champions for sure. So anyways, we're going to have a great interview with these four guys coming up in a minute. Before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number, 813-922-8939, or if it's easier, just go to their website, flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com, and they will work with anybody in the continental United States. And just tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and tell them that the owner, Jeff, said they will get a free consultation, and they will also get 20% off their first order. All right, so what else is going on? I hope everybody, again, is safe going through this virus. It seems like, listening to the news, like things are lightening up a little bit, so we'll see what happens as we are like 3 weeks into April, so we'll see what happens as this month ends and we get into May. I know in Florida, where I'm at, they're saying the gyms are going to open up around May 1st or May 8th, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But it seems like, maybe, hopefully, cross your fingers, it seems like it's getting better, like the worst is over. I do have some good news. The results are in from my John Hansen Fitness Challenge. I started this challenge on January 20th. It was a 12-week fitness challenge. And so basically the deal was, if you signed up to join in with the challenge, I would write up a training program and a diet for you, and I would follow you through the 12 weeks of preparation. So we had quite a few people join up for the first time we ever did this. And of course, we sort of got waylaid by this coronavirus about a month ago, which really messed a lot of people up because the gyms were closing. People weren't able to work out anymore. They had to work out at home. And those that didn't have weights do just free weight exercises. So for a lot of people, that just obviously wasn't the same. It was also, I'm sure, difficult staying on the diet because the food was actually hard to get, as many of us have experienced since this thing started. So it was difficult getting food because people were hoarding food, and then the grocery stores were limiting. You could only buy so many eggs. You could only buy so much water. So it was really messed up for a lot of people, including myself. I went through it out here in Tampa. So anyways, we did have some people who did stick with it. So I want to announce the winners right here on the show, and I'm going to be sending out a special email tomorrow, of course, for all the people that joined and all the people on my email list. If you're interested in getting on my email list, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I'll put you on our email list. You can also sign up for it at our bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, which is the official website of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So anyways, here are our winners. All right, first place goes to Paul Aliota. Now, Paul, I'm going to give you his measurements here. He started off, he's not a big guy. He's only 152 pounds when he started. He had a 33-inch waist. And after the end of the fitness challenge, which was April 13th, which was a week ago, Paul was down to 137.5 pounds, and his waist went down to 27.5. So he lost like 6.5 inches off his waist. Amazing. But wait till you see these pictures of Paul from before and after. Amazing. I mean, you can't believe it's the same guy, especially in only 12 weeks. In his before picture, he didn't really look like he had much muscle mass, and he had a stomach that was sticking out. And he absolutely swears he did not push that stomach out. He said he doesn't even know how to do that. But now he is ripped. And I know Paul worked very hard because Paul was one of the few guys that was actually keeping in touch with me each week. I offered this, of course, to everybody, but not everybody took me up on it. But Paul was sending me his workouts each week, and he said, what do I do this week, John? And I would write out the workouts with the weights. I would say, okay, do this, do this, do this. And I would change it every week. And then toward the end, we had to adjust it a little bit because Paul was getting a little weak from all the dieting, and his calories were very low, but he stuck with it, went through all this coronavirus stuff, was able to find ways to work out, was able to find, even with his traveling, he was staying on his diet. So amazing progress to Paul Aliota. He is our first place winner, so congratulations to him. And in winning first place, he's going to get $200 in supplements from Old School Labs. He's also going to get a copy of each one of my books, which is The Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, The MP6 Workout, and The Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder. Plus, he'll get both of my DVDs, The Real Muscle DVD, which is a training DVD, and then The Natural Bodybuilding Seminar and Competitions DVD. This was a seminar that I gave several years ago, about over 10 years ago now. And I did it in Michigan, the college out there. And so we taped it, and this is part of my bodybuilding seminar DVD. So Paul is going to get both of those DVDs. He's going to get all three of my books, plus $200 of supplements. And I'm going to do an interview with him on Skype, and we're going to put this interview up on johnhansonfitness.com and, of course, on YouTube. So congratulations to Paul for all his dedication. It paid off. Second place went to Matt Craig. Now, Matt is a little bit older than Paul. He's not a young guy, but he also made some amazing progress in the 12-week period. He started off at 225 pounds with a 40-inch waist and went down to 201 pounds with a 36-inch waist. So he lost 4 inches off his waist. But again, the measurements don't tell the whole story. Wait till you see these pictures of Matt Craig. Unbelievable change in his physique. Really amazing. It was really actually close. I was really debating whether to give it to Matt or give it to Paul for first place because it was really, really close. But a great, great job by Matt Craig, and he really only lost 4 inches on the waist, but wait till you see the pictures. Huge difference. He's another one. Stomach was sticking out. Now he's got abs. He's hard. Amazing progress. And he lost 25 pounds during this 12-week period. So Matt is going to get second place. He'll get $100 in supplements from Old School Labs. He's going to get a copy of my MP6 workout book, and he's also going to get the Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder book, and he's going to get the Real Muscle DVD. And then finally, in third place, we have Ronnie Kirby, and Ronnie also made some great progress. He started off at 212 pounds, 41-inch waist, went down to 199, got below 200 pounds, with a 37.5-inch waist. So great job to Ronnie Kirby also. And Ronnie gets third place. He'll get $75 in supplements from Old School Labs. He's going to get a copy of my book, The MP6 Workout. And he'll also get a copy of the Real Muscle DVD. So congratulations to those three guys for being the top three placers. Like I said, check out johnhansonfitness.com this week, and I will have the report up there. I'm also going to have the interview up on YouTube. So check that out. And it'll also, of course, be on johnhansonfitness.com as well. So check that out, and congratulations to those guys. Congratulations to all the people that joined the John Hanson Fitness Challenge. And as I said last week, I'm going to do this again as soon as the gyms open up, because it really doesn't make sense to do it before that, because people just have a hard time making progress if you're not able to work out. You can do the diet by itself, of course, but the only way to really keep muscle and lose fat, which is the whole point of the challenge, is to, you got to do both. So we are definitely going to do it again, and hopefully it'll be even bigger and better, and we'll have more prizes. So if you guys are interested in that, I will keep you up to date on that for sure. And just regularly check out my website, johnhansonfitness.com, for any information on that. All right. And of course, we got the John Hanson Bodybuilding Seminar that was postponed. It was supposed to take place on March 21st and 22nd last month. But of course, we had to postpone it because the gym was closed and this coronavirus, nobody wanted to travel. So hopefully we will be able to reschedule that soon. All right. We did get an email from David Bunda. It was about Muhammad McAway. I talked about McAway last week because he is now pretty active on his Instagram channel, and I think he's also on Facebook. So if you guys want to go on Muhammad McAway's Instagram channel, if you're on Instagram, and send him a private message, ask him if he can come on to our show. I'd really appreciate it. But David said, hey, John, I listen to your podcasts, which are terrific and truly represent what bodybuilding is supposed to be. I'm 56 years old from Toronto, and I was Muhammad McAway's training partner from 1982 to 1984. And also trained Gladys Portuguese for the 1984 Miss Olympia. This was all done under gym owner Ken Wheeler and Vince Gironda's guidance and watchful eye, and very well documented in Muscle Mag, as Bob Kennedy lived right there. I see you asked McAway to come on your show. I write this to find it strange that McAway, who for years told people to fuck off and wanted nothing to do with bodybuilding, has suddenly emerged on social media with a big smile and training slash posing advice, and denouncing that he ever had a trainer or help. Vince and Ken most definitely did his training and diet, as they did Gladys. Maybe all this money available now with the camel crew and bodybuilding being so huge in the Middle East, Muhammad has reinvented the past for the dollar signs he's chasing. These old champs deserve all the money they can make now, as they got table scraps from Weider. But it is an interesting version he's putting out there. Keep up the great work of documenting the golden age, David Bunda, site manager. Thank you, David, for your email. If you guys have any comments you want to make, just send it to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I will read them on the air. All right, that's it for our opening. Here is our interview with John Defendis, Tom Terwilliger, Jerry Scalise, and Richard Politano, and we're going to talk about the tribute to the great Bob Gruskin, who passed away just last week. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends Show, and I have a very special show this week. On April 14th of this week, unfortunately, we lost a real guru in the industry. Bob Gruskin passed away on April 14th this week, and we've got some of his students here, some of the great bodybuilders that Bob mentored over the years, and we're going to do kind of a little tribute to Bob Gruskin. Let me introduce everybody. We got Tom Terwilliger, an IFBB pro bodybuilder, and then we've got Jerry Scalise, former Mr. Universe, from calling from New York. We got Richard Politano, who is a good friend of Bob, and he's calling from Florida. And then finally, we got John Defendis, 1988 Mr. USA, and all you guys are have been mentored by Bob, and your careers have been influenced by him. So, Tom, let's start with you. You're in Colorado now, but you're originally from New York. How did you first meet Bob Gruskin?
Well, I tell you something. It's interesting because I heard some stories recently about Bob, and John Defendis was kind enough to really do a great tribute for John on his Facebook page. It had well over, and he may be able to update me on this, but it had well over 300 comments. I was like, 360, 400 is insane. And as I was reading some of those comments, it was just extraordinary how many lives Bob Gruskin touched. And as I read through some of those stories, I began to realize, I said, you know what? That's my story. His story is my story, and his story is my story. And Bob, he had this way of bringing people together and connecting them. And in many respects, that's what happened with John and I and many of the other champion bodybuilders that he was mentoring. But I believe, and again, it's hard to remember exactly when because it was so early on. I was a teenager. I was competing in probably some of the most, I don't want to call them prestigious. They weren't terribly prestigious, but the most popular competitions of the day on the East Coast, which is, you know, the Mr. Suburban, the Colonial America. All these competitions were like the pinnacle. If you were there and you did well, you were competing with the best. And I think I met Bob at one of those competitions, and he introduced himself as he did with so many young athletes. He says, "Hey, you're kind of like a kid thing. You've got a lot of potential, kid. You know what I mean? Where you're from?" He got a little information and found out I was training at a place called Future Man Gym with a guy named Tony Pandolfo and some of these other great champions that were on the East Coast at that time, and showed up at the gym one time and just, you know, we started chatting, became friends, and then he showed up one day as I was training for the Teenage Metropolitan Championship. He showed up with this guy, with this, like, and I'll never forget the day. The guy, Bob walks in and says, "Hello," and he introduces me to this guy. The guy just, like, skin-tight leather jacket on. He looked like a badass, right? And he says, Bob says, "This is John Defendis. He's your competition at the upcoming Teen Metropolitan Championship. Let me tell you something. I shrunk. I went back into the locker room, went home, and never wanted to come back." So Bob was gifted at motivating people, at connecting people, at making young athletes feel like they were special, like they had something. His eye, if you caught his eye, and he had a little belief in you, you believed in yourself. So the exact meaning, how it happened, I don't know, but the one I do remember the most is the introduction to John Defendis via Bob Gruskin at Future Man Gym. And that was probably back in, what was that, John? Probably 77. You know?
Wow, yeah.
Crazy, man.
Jerry, how about you? You and Bob go way back. I know he was a big influence on your career. When was the first time you met him?
We'll bring John into this again. I was training for the Colonial America, and the night before, I don't know, it was my first show, and a good friend of mine knew John from Hicksville, and John invited me to come to his brother's deli. I came there about 10 o'clock at night, went into the back. You know, like I said, the fire was still on at the stove, and John gave me a posing routine in the back of the deli while the fire was going on. And so, you know, the next day I went to Colonial America. I took third place, my first teenage show, and Bob
lost on his posing.
And you know, Bob called me and said, you know, Johnny told me you're pretty good, and from there, that's where it started. You know, like I think it was 1978. I think, yes, 1978 that was. And you know, the rest is history. And just me and Bob formed the bond. And you know, like I said, he was like a father figure, mentor. You know, he was the myth, the man, the legend.
Yeah. The original man.
Put it that way. And he was the master of illusion, too. And, you know, it's like I said, it's surreal that he's gone. It's like, you know, you still might want to call that 882 number 718 to the Bronx.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Bob touched a lot of lives. And, like I said, it wasn't just bodybuilding. It was just about life.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, sad that he's gone, but his memories last on forever.
Right,
and,
right.
And there's so many. It's just like, it's just not us four, and, you know, there's like 500 more, maybe
more. Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's, you know, that's how we met.
Richard, how about you? Tell us about when you met first met Bob.
I met Bob in 1983. I was a senior in high school, and I was competing in the Metropolitan Championships. Tommy, you were there, I believe.
Yeah.
The year that you won the men's open.
That would have been, that's right. That was after I had come back, took off a few years, came back. And so did you win or you were competing in it? Did you win?
I competed against Vinny Conzo. The beast from the east. When I saw Vinny Conzo, I was like, okay, what am I doing here? I get last. You know, it happens. It happens to a lot of guys in their first competitions. Vinny Conzo was a monster as a teenager. And Bob came up to me during the pump-up room. We were talking a little bit. And we just kept in touch. And I really started working seriously with Bob in 1986. I was getting ready for the East Coast. I won the heavyweight class at the East Coast. I was only, I think, 20 years old, maybe. Oh, yeah, about 20 years old. I won the heavyweight at the East Coast. And then he started prepping me for some other shows. And I did really well. I did really well on the boat. Great friendship, father figure, mentor, and a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me make a lot of decisions, especially when it came to walking away from the sport because I had a job opportunity. And it was, I was getting ready for the 1989 Mr. America. Everyone wants to be Mr. America when you're a kid.
Right.
So I had just taken third in the tall class at the USA, and Jerry guest posed at that show. It was in Chicago, AAU Junior USA, I think. What, Junior America?
Yeah, Junior America.
So Junior America. And I was going to get ready for the America a few months later. And then I got the phone call from the police academy. You've been hired. You need to report in August. And here I am getting ready for the Mr. America, my dream show. And I had to make that decision. I said, Bob, what should I do? And he said, well, you can go in the show and take your chances and possibly win. Or you can take the job, which is going to guarantee you a 20-year career and a pension and benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Once you become Mr. America, what's next? How long can you ride that train before the next generation comes up and you're not that guy anymore?
Right.
It was a decision. I beat myself up for years over it. But I don't make the right decision. But I always still followed bodybuilding. I stayed in touch with Bob almost 35 years now.
Wow, okay.
Wow. Father figure. I've helped him judge shows, the NABBA USA. I stayed involved with that. It's been a nice ride with him. He was really an inspiration to me, a father figure. I was called my Jewish dad. He was my Jewish dad.
And John Defendis, let's hear from you. I know that Steve Mihalik was a big inspiration in your career. He was a big coach, but Bob Gruskin also was, right?
I was just Steve's punching bag. Bob was really Steve, see, I was the only one stupid enough to keep coming back. Usually somebody trained with Steve one time and they'd never come back. The guy was Mr. America. I wanted to be Mr. America. I grew up in a very goal-oriented home. My dad was a bodybuilder. My brother was a two-time All-American National Wrestling Champion and Coach Dan Gable's camp. And so I grew up in an atmosphere of champions and, you know, that mindset. So I felt if I wanted to be Mr. America, I had to go find Mr. America and find out what he did to get there, you know? Mm-hmm. What I found out is a couple trips to the hospital and get the crap beat out of me. And my mother forbid me to go back, and I kept going back. So, but really, Bob, you had Steve and you had Bob. Steve, literally twice a day, every day for almost 5 years, beat the shit out of me. And Bob was the yin to the yang. He was the guy that kept me alive, you know. Steve would tell me to do something, and I'd go back to Bob and say, Bob, should I do this? And Bob would be like, no, you're out of your mind. That'll kill you, you know. So I have to say that Bob, not only like the other guys, not only was Bob my mentor, my father, my coach, my cheerleader, but he was the guy who kept me alive and kept me making the right decisions, you know. You know, I met Bob in the mid-70s when I competed in the Teenage America, and I had told the story before that where he came up to me. I got my ass blown off the stage, and I was sitting in the cheap seats, and Bob came over and sat next to me, and he said, you know, how you doing, kid? Nice. And I kind of looked at him like, who are you, you know? He said, you know, you got some potential there, you know? And I said, the judges didn't think so, you know? And so he grabbed my arm, and I pulled my arm away. What are you doing? He said, see what kind of shape you're in, you know? See if you know what you got there.
See what you got.
So I was kind of rude to him, you know, and then we got to talking, and then he said, well, you know, I'm a photographer. I write for the magazines. It's amazing how quick you go from pulling your arm away to really, how you doing there, mister? You know? And, so, you know, Bob befriended me, and, he became, you know, my mentor, my coach, you know, my advisor, you know, just, like Richie says, you know, he really gave us good advice. And the most important advice that he gave all of us was that bodybuilding wasn't a career, you know, that you can want to be Mr. America and you can go after that goal and you can put all your heart and soul into it, but you had to have the backup plan. You had to have something that was solid. Okay. And you know, so he made us understand that right away from the very beginning, you know, and you know, going back to the first time Bob introduced me to, the Tooele guy, you know, Tommy played this off. He's a big, scary guy and everything. What Tommy doesn't tell you is several weeks later, he blew my ass off the stage at the Metropolitan.
Wow.
He won the teenage. I took second. Tommy took fourth in the open. I took fifth. And it was at that contest that I realized I had work to do, you know. Tommy had incredible legs, incredible posing routine, great charisma. I knew I had to go back and work really hard. And I did. And I came back and I won the teenage Metropolitan and the overall Mr. Metropolitan the next year. I'm the only teenager to ever have been able to do that. I was blessed to have that, you know, opportunity. And then, you know, Tommy didn't win it for a few years after that, but we'll talk about that.
I was busy building motorcycles and riding with outlaws. Yeah, I had better things to do, man. Of course, Bob wasn't happy about that. He knew that I had taken a path that wasn't the best path, you know, that I could choose. And he always tried to mentor me out of that direction. I will say this, after those 5 years that I took a layoff, and John and Jerry were excelling. They were, I mean, competing in these shows and just doing so well. And I was watching it happen while I was sitting back building the best bike on the block, you know. But if it wasn't for Bob Gruskin and his early mentorship, and later on, knowing that, hey, you know what, this is not the lifestyle I should be in. I need to move. I need to get back to what I was doing, to those fundamentals. It was Bob, in many respects, that, and one other mentor, Tony Pandolfo, and of course, my belief in God and my great parents. But certainly, Bob had such a great influence because he was like that. Every one of you talked about this. Is that it wasn't just, in fact, the least of it was the bodybuilding coaching. Hmm. Most of it was the life coaching. He was preparing us to be men, to go out into the real world and to be something. He knew that bodybuilding was just the start of that. Bodybuilding was a way for us to learn to believe in ourselves and that to set goals and to achieve those goals and to know that we're going to run into obstacles. In fact, John, we've all had this experience where Bob, even when he knew, I think, we can't be sure, but I think he knew we weren't going to win this particular contest, but we were encouraged to go anyway. Just so we could get our asses handed to us a little bit. Just so we could get to learn the lesson. Because you can be great. You can be a great champion. You can have great legs. You can have great this, that, and the other thing. But if you don't know how to lose, you can't be a champion. And right. Bob knew that was such an important lesson at those in those early teen years, man. And he created those lessons for us.
And he pitted us against each other, but not in a vicious way. He was very sly.
No.
You know? He would have us compete against each other. But he would just be, you know, he was like, he was there for all of us, but he knew one of us was going to get our ass kicked and that was going to be a lesson, you know. Another thing, too, is one thing I got to say, you know, Bob was very, very selective with who he worked with. Mm. And people say Bob looked for great potential. But I think it was beyond a person's physical potential. I think what Bob looked for was people who had heart, people who cared. They were good people. When you look at this incredible team of athletes that Bob coached, you know, going from, you know, from Richie, Jerry, Tommy, you know, all these great champions, you know, Chris Aceto and, Matt Dufresne, but
Jeff King, Matt Mendenhall. I mean, it's just the list goes on and on.
But it's the list is right there. There's Ricky Beretta. You got Joe Mito. I mean, it goes on and on. And I realized that yesterday. I mean, I knew it was big, but then you start to really think about it, you know, and the list goes on and on. But the one thing that we all had in common, we all had heart, we all cared, and we all hurt, and we all felt, and we all looked out for each other and everybody around us. We all developed, if we had a good part of it, we had good hearts, but Bob developed those hearts so that we would be great champions that cared about people and cared to help other people, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's Bob. I mean, you know, when people say, wow, you know, you really care about people, like, you know, I think about it. Well, yeah, you know what? Because I was brought up the right way, like Tommy says, with great parents, but Bob taught us so many lessons just by his actions. He didn't have to tell us, you need to do this. We just watched what he did and said, oh, okay, that's what we got to do. We got to care about other people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Jerry, I hear about Bob saying to almost everybody, you got great genetics, you got great potential. How do you think he knew that? How do you think he was able to pick you guys out, all these champions that he had, and figure out who had the great potential?
Well, I was just saying to someone yesterday, I said, if you look around, everybody had legs that Bob worked with.
Yeah.
Everybody.
I don't know not one person that didn't have legs. But like John said, it just wasn't the bodybuilding. Like, you could pay him $1 million. If he didn't want to work with you, he didn't work with you.
No.
And he worked with a certain select people. You know, like John said, people that cared about other people, didn't cause havoc. And he had that eye. He had that, you know, he can turn. I tell people, I used to go over his house Monday. By Friday, you'd look in that small mirror and magic happened.
Yes.
And he was like the wizard. and well, it was just unbelievable. It's like, it's hard to explain. They know. It's just hard to explain to someone. And people would go, what did he do? And I would say, I just listened. I never questioned him.
Yeah.
Bob spent every dime he had on us.
Yep.
He didn't make money. All these guys today, everybody's got to make a buck. Everyone's got to make a buck.
Right.
It's all
right.
Money. Bob never asked for anything. And I have to tell you that I think in the final days, what really killed Bob was Bob did not have the capacity to have anybody help him. You know, he was a caregiver. He did not want anybody to be responsible. He did not want to be a burden to anybody. And when I spoke to him about 5 days before he passed away, I could tell this guy, he's given up in his heart because he would rather die than have somebody have to take care of him than be a burden.
That's true.
Hmm. Wow. You know, I want to touch base on something real quick that Jerry mentioned, that Bob had such a great, and I don't know if we can call it an eye or an intuition, and it wasn't about just the genetics or the musculature or the legs or whatever it might be, although that was a commonality certainly. But he had an eye for, we're calling it an eye, for, and you know, since I'm referring to myself as well as the incredible abundant amount of people and champions that he worked with, an eye for good people with good hearts. And I think in many respects, one of the things that's really come to light for me is, and you don't really learn to understand this, recognize it, or appreciate it early on, but I do now. I certainly recognize it now that the only way to know that is not an eye, it's not a hint, it's not something someone does per se, is that you have to be that person. If you don't resonate as the person who is good and caring and a nurturer and a giver, as you say, as Bob was, then you can't possibly resonate with other people that feel that, have that in them. That's what he had. He had something. It was almost like an electricity that he knew. He recognized it because he resonated with it. It was who he was. And in many respects, it's who we all wanted to become. Bob, for those who are watching who don't know Bob, have never seen Bob, he was a little Jewish professor, Brooklyn professor. I mean, just a little guy with thick glasses and just probably the most unassuming man you will ever see in your life. But at the same time, in many respects, and I think you guys can agree, we all wanted to be like Bob. He was a good person. He was a giver. He was a carer. He was something. It was a strength about him that we didn't even recognize then, but we wanted. This is why we listened. This is why we got in front of that puny little bathroom mirror in the basement, and we saw magic happen. Because this guy with this heart and this spirit believed in us.
Hmm. And it
electrified us, man.
Not only that, Tommy, but we all, that moment where it was time to get in front of that mirror, it was, oh, my God, what's Bob going to think?
We better be ready.
Yeah.
You know, everything came down to what was going to come out of Bob's mouth because you knew, one, that it was going to be brutally honest. He was going to tell you the truth. You know, he didn't care. He didn't mince words. Hey, he wasn't getting paid. He wasn't there to give us, you know, blow a bunch of bullshit, you know. And, you know, like I had said also where I trained a whole year for the USA, and 6 weeks before the contest, Bob came down to Florida and he took a lead. I see, I was all excited. You know, I trained a whole year. I was in the best shape of my life. And I couldn't wait for him to look at me. And I stripped down in my posing trunks and, you know, he had me do quarter turns and, you know, looked at me a couple shots and he said, okay. And I said, well, you know, what do you think? He says, you know, and then he adjusted his little pens in his pocket there. And, well, you know, we'll talk over dinner, you know. And he said, we'll talk over dinner. I'm like, but what? And he walked away.
Yeah.
We go to dinner. I'm waiting. I'm expecting, hey man, you got a good shot to win the show. And Bob said, I said, well, you know, Bob, what do you think? And he, well, I think maybe we should wait a year and train for next year. I swear, I can't
be honest.
You know, and it was because my hamstrings were weak. You know, I'd done these 60-set leg workouts with Mihalik for years. And after the 60 sets, he'd leave the gym and say, do hamstrings. And he's going to come back and do them later. I'd do a half a set of legs, half a set of leg curls. And I follow him as soon as I seen his car drive away. I was out the door, you know. Hey, I'll be honest with you. 60 sets of hard legs with Mihalik. The last thing you want to do is you got an option to get out the door? You're out the door. you know what? I'm not so this big tough guy that says, yeah. No, I crawled out the door after he left. And it was those workouts, those hamstring workouts that I missed that I had to make up for the last 6 weeks. So I was training almost every single night at 3 o'clock in the morning, just hamstrings. So I was training at 7 in the morning to 8:30. I was training again at 8 o'clock at night. I was working full day. So I would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, train hamstrings, and then go home, eat, and then train again at 7, you know? And my hamstrings were not my best body part for the USA, but I had everything, so I was able to win the show. The, you know, when you're standing next to Rennell John Vie's hamstrings, you know, I don't care if you're Lee Haney, I don't care if you're, you know, the greatest bodybuilders around could not, you know, stand next to Rennell when it came to glutes and hamstrings, you know?
Yeah. No chance, man.
You know, so,
hey, guys, I have to – after you finish that, I got to share this story with you because
– Please.
All you guys are lifers like me. It's very hard to walk away from this.
Right.
You know, as much as you sometimes do. And I'll just tell you a little story. After the Teenage USA, I was turning 20. So Bob says, do you want to go down? We're going to go down to Maryland to hit a show. And you never questioned Bob. You just, you know, you loved it. You just wanted to show yourself off. And you never questioned Bob. So we get up, we go to Penn Station, and we get on a train, and we're going down to Maryland. So we get off, we take a cab to this place, the venue. So the venue is the Moose Lodge or the VFW Hall, one of the two. So I would imagine today's guy would say, oh, what the fuck is this? But we just looked at each other, and I didn't say, oh, what do we come? And we just, that was it. We walked into this place. It was a VFW Hall. So we were, they had like a full crowd there, whatever they could fit. So we were pumping up in the back of where the beer was, the cases of beer, the bar, you know, in the back of those rooms.
Uh-huh.
And we're pumping up. So the backdrop was just like a black curtain. And then when you walked out to pose, there was like, I can't even explain it, a platform. The platform was probably used to get beer that was up high that they couldn't get. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, like you said, you always listen to Bob. You never question him. And, you know, I ended up winning. You know, it was a pretty decent thing. And we got back on the train. Not once did I say, Bob, why'd you make me come down here? It was like, you know, you were so part of the sport and you just wanted to show yourself. And right, like you said, there was no money involved. It was just that, you know, that training and you wanted to go there. But like, it's just so funny how, you know, people complain about venues and stuff. And you guys all must have went to these venues. And,
oh, yeah.
But you loved it. And, you know, to this day, I still love the whole sport. But Jerry, with Bob, it was just an adventure. Places we used to go, Wildwood. And, you know, we'd go down to Wildwood. The show would ended at 2 o'clock in the morning. He has me hitting shots. And I go to hit a shot, and I have this 6-foot trophy, and I hit it, and the thing just splatters. Hey, guys, you remember the old trophies they had, like, the thing there with the
they were huge.
But, you know, those were adventures that you can never forget.
Never forget East Orange, New Jersey, the Suburban, the Colonial America. It was a YMCA, for crying out loud.
I was just going to say that, Tommy, that the first Suburban I competed in at the East Orange YMCA.
That was the Colonial America was there, too.
It had that upper deck that, you know, you
stood. That's right. It had like a balcony thing going on.
Yeah.
I swear the posing platform was a bunch of wood, what do you call it?
Crates or something.
Wood nailed together.
Yeah.
You know, the platform was shaking. It was a light bulb.
A light bulb.
You know, right. And I'm never forgetting. And then Dwayne Broadway blew me away in that show. And I didn't know it until the other day when he jumped on the thread. This is 45 years later, he jumps on the thread and said, oh, yeah, Bob helped me when I was a teenager. He trained me for the shows. And no wonder why I lost. I didn't meet Bob yet, and he trained him for the Teenage Suburban. You know,
Don, John, the bottom line is you never lost to anyone who wasn't being trained by Bob Gruskin. That was it.
I lost like my first nine contests. My dad said maybe you should try like baseball, you know?
Hey, John, this is off subject because I know that John Hansen, you know, I mean, you're just a great champion yourself, natural Mr. Olympia. I mean, just you've got such a great record. I know you didn't have a chance to meet Bob or even train with him, but you must have had some experiences like that with those dungeon-like old – because you go back a few years, too.
Yeah.
Your first competition, where was that, man?
My show was in 79, and they had the prejudging at a gym. So they moved all the equipment.
At an actual gym, like a workout gym.
Yeah, we stood against the wall, and the judges were in folding chairs right in front of us.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, speaking of that, Tom, I'm from Chicago, so we would always look at the guys from the East Coast, and we all knew that Gruskin trained them, you know, and everybody, like one of you guys said, you know, the Mr. America was the title. And I came from a gym, Hammer's Gym, and we had Glenn Kinnear there, John Gus. We had a lot of, like, national-level guys. All these guys were trying to win the America. And I remember like one year, I think it was 84, there was like 8 or 10 guys from Chicago all going in there. But we would always be fearful of what was coming from the East Coast. And all the Ruskin's guys, you know, like you said, they all had legs. And we were like, what the fuck is he doing with these guys? They all look amazing, you know. And I think it was Miko that year that won it. So it was like, and then King the year before, and everybody was, you know, looking at Jeff King like, this guy's unbelievable.
Oh,
yeah, I remember competing as a teenager one year. I was in the Teenage Midwest, and this guy came out of New York, and Gruskin was training him. He looked just like Mike Quinn. I think it was the year after Mike won the Teenage America. And this guy, I forget what his name was, but he looked just like Mike. And I got second to this guy, and that's what I did meet Bob for a short time. He put me in the magazine Muscle Up. Remember that magazine, Muscle Up?
He was a big photographer, a writer for Muscle Up. Yeah.
So he gave me like a one-page thing in there, one-page interview. So, yeah, but I admire you guys, or I envy you guys that you all got to meet Bob, and he actually trained you because he was a legend to all of us in Chicago. You know, we all knew of Ruskin's guys.
And, that's so funny because we didn't know that. We didn't realize anybody else was seeing what was going on, right?
You know, when you look back, you know, from where we're at now, you know, we see things from such a different perspective. And I always tell people, right now you're in a moment that you're going to look at 25 years from now and say, wow, I really had some, you know, the right people around me, you know. And you know, a lot of it at that time, you're so in the moment, you don't realize it. Now we look back, and it's just so amazing. But the one thing that Bob did, besides all the millions of things he's done, was to make sure that we were conditioned, that we were ready to get on stage. I mean, every single one of Bob's athletes were the most highly conditioned athletes in the contest.
Yeah.
No matter what show it was. You look at that, and that was Bob's MO. You know what? You know, you in the off season, you train, you try to stay hard, try to stay in reasonable shape. But when it came time for contest, you know what? It all came down to you're going to get shredded. It's not about size. It's about conditioning, you know?
Yeah.
You know? And that's what it was, you know? We learned that conditioning wins.
You know what? And some people might be listening and saying, like, well, what kind of – give me something specific, right? And there was so much that he would disseminate. And like you said, Jerry, you never argued with it. You never said no. You never, and it wasn't because it was like, oh, my God, I don't want to say no. I'm so afraid of Bob. No, it was because you respected him as such.
Right.
You never said no. If he said, we're going here, we're going there, we're going to answer this, we're going to do that, you listened. You just did it. And I remember, and just one very small, specific thing, I remember, and I think it was the first coming back from a long layoff, riding my motorcycles, doing my thing, and then coming back for the Metropolitan Championship that year. And I can't remember what year it was I won the overall, long after John Defendus took that overall title. And I remember I was back to that old diet. You know, it was like tuna fish and nothing. You know, it was like tuna fish and nothing. You know what I mean? It was like, that was it. You know, and maybe if I was lucky, I had some desiccated liver and some brewer's yeast shakes. And it was like, oh, my God. The gas was insane. But anyway, I remember Bob taking a look at me. And he advised something that I'd never heard of before, that no one ever had recommended before. He says, you need to add about, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4, maybe 6 ounces of olive oil into your diet.
Yeah.
Olive oil. I was like, well, oil, fat? And again, I didn't question it. But the transformation was phenomenal. what it did, having that essential fatty acid, those omegas into my body at that time, was just absolutely transformational. And it was just that. And this is what Bob did. He was fantastic at disseminating small little things and almost making them not like, he never tried to create a placebo effect. Like, this is going to create unbelievable. Wait till you see the results you're going to get from this thing. Placebo, right? He just said, try it. I'll recommend just do a little olive oil in there, right? And I was like, what? And man, oh man, that's the kind of little things that he would do and say that if you listened, it worked.
Yeah. He never made the right wrong move. Never made the wrong move.
What's that?
A little tweak separated you from everybody else.
Right.
It was really do this, add a little of this, and it made the world of a difference.
Mm.
Well, we never questioned, you know, unlike today where people are Googling everything and getting on YouTube and, you know, we never, ever even considered asking another person what to do. We knew we had the guy, we listened to him, we respected him, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he always gave us the respect and showed us how much he cared about us. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to make him happy, and the best way to make him happy was to show him that we cared enough and respected him enough to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Bob have a background in nutrition?
Bob, does anybody have a clue?
Bob a genius and a doctor. Bob was so brilliant. I mean, he was a college professor, biology, chemistry. Okay. I remember when I'd be at his house, I'd be at his house and he'd say, oh, hey, you know, here, I want you to take this test. And I'd be like, what? He'd go, yeah, you know, I gave this test in my biology class today. And I'm like, I am like not student, okay? You know, in high school, I was, you know, I got thrown out of class for writing out workouts during tests, you know. And I actually 3 years ago, a teacher wrote on my page, I remember you from over 40 years ago. I threw you out of class for writing out workouts during the test. He says, hey, it looks like that worked out for you, you know. But the truth is, so I sat down with this test, and it was, thank God it was multiple choice. So I was like going, Bob was over there smoking his cigarette, sitting on his desk. And I'm sitting there, yeah, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, B, C, you know, right now. And then he would look at the test. I had no idea what this test said. I mean, it was so ridiculously difficult. But, you know, that was his work. He was brilliant. But yeah, he never came across, he never tried to impress us with his brilliance. He didn't say, I'm a college professor. I'm this. I know this. He was just, quite honestly, I was thinking about it today. I think the man was such a genius. His intelligence level was so incredible that he just knew what to do, but he never, ever had to convince us, you know. Or brag or boast or who he was or what he, and the fact he was a college professor, he never came into play, you know?
No.
And it's just amazing. I've been thinking about it. The last 2 days, I've been thinking about Bob a lot because it's so, like Tommy said, so surreal that he's not here. Because periodically, maybe once a month, I'd call Bob and, you know, it's just the comfort of hearing his voice and, you know, when he's there, you know, and now he's not there and I have to say it's very depressing.
Yeah. Now you guys, he worked with you guys when you guys were mostly teenagers. He didn't charge you, right? I mean, this was just all, he just was trying to help you.
No, he paid for stuff. Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
He paid out of his own pocket for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He paid for admissions, flights, and hotels. He paid for a lot. I used
food,
to get half the money. Let me buy you a ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you think about the way it is now, it's like all these coaches, all these contest prep coaches, these people today, they can't do one show without having a contest prep coach. And they take money for everybody, you know?
I tried to get Tommy to help. He wanted to charge me $500 a month.
That was a retainer, John. I was only a retainer. You know, I was never going to get you to the contest. It was never going to, that was not that little bit. Are you kidding?
Contest.
That was just what to contest? Evaluate you.
I told Tommy, 2050, I'm coming out. I'm coming back.
Oh, man. All right. I'll tell you what. If you're coming after me.
The Palmetto Senior Center in 2050. You know, I got my trunks already. I bought them last week. And I started my contest prep. I got 30
years. Wait a minute. I think you better turn those trunks in and get some Depends. is what I'm thinking.
No, but John, getting back to Bob about his generosity.
Yeah.
When I was a teenager, I had a full big basement. Tommy knows I had a big basement.
Oh, man. What a gym you had.
One day a truck pulls up and they say equipment delivery and for John DeFendis. And my mother goes, "What's this? What's going on?" And I said, "I don't know." I came out and they got an equipment delivery. I don't know. I don't know anything about this. It says, "Yeah, it's a gift from Bob Gruskin." Right?
No way,
dude. A whole gym, my whole basement had equipment in it: leg extension machine, hack squat machine, squat rack. I mean, a lat pull down machine. A whole setup. This guy didn't even tell me. Surprised me with it, you know.
Unbelievable.
And that's the kind of guy he was, you know.
Yeah. And I will tell you this, I'm pissed at Bob for that, because I started training with John in his basement. It almost killed me. Between John's insanity, and this is before he started training with Mahalik. It was insanity already. And then between that and his mother yelling that, opening the door every time, "Turn down that freaking music!" But it was a hell of a gym, man. And that's the way Bob was. And again, just one quick brief note about the person that Bob was I remember when my mom, this was later on, my mom had brain surgery. She had a tumor removed, and she was at NYU Hospital. And I would get to visit my mom about twice or three times a week or so. Bob was there every time I visited. He had no idea I was coming. I think he might have been there every single day. Yeah. And it wasn't like we were, you know, a super close family, but that's who he was. That's who he just loved the families. He respected them. If he asked someone, Richard, I think you had a story where, if he asked someone to go, "Hey, you want to go to Connecticut? We're going to go to the Connecticut Championship or something." He said, "I'm going to call your parents. So I'm going to make sure it's okay." He would always respect those boundaries as well. Always. Remember that, guys?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I tell you nothing. Going back to what Tommy said about training in my basement, you know, we had a dartboard in my basement, and we take the darts and we throw it at the dartboard, and I was throwing for Tommy, you know, so I was trying to get that bullseye, because if I hit the bullseye, he'd have to do 50 reps, you know.
I remember.
That was nuts. So I tell you, we made a game of it. So it's like you throw the dart, and whatever number it's on, that's how many reps the other guy had to do. I wanted to bury him. I was like, you know, every time he threw the dart, I'm like, "Oh, come on, give me one, Tommy, give me one," you know. And I'm trying to hit the bullseye, you know. He's right. My mother would yell down, "He turned the music down." And
we used to play the Allman Brothers. It was so loud. I think that's part of my hearing loss, gotta be honest.
And then she would always yell, say, "I don't understand. You could lift those weights all night long like that, but I asked you to take out the garbage. It's too much." You know?
I'm recovering, Mom. I'm recovering.
What was it about the legs? Because all you guys had great legs. I mean, what did he do? Did he give you leg training programs, or did he just pick guys who had great genetics for legs, or what happened?
He would take you in the gym and train you. You had this little short, like Tommy said, Jewish man professor. And like I said the other day, he knew how to work every muscle because he was pretty much a doctor of anatomy and physiology, and he knew how everything worked. And it was amazing. And like you said, you never questioned it. You did what he told you. And, and he put you through some hard workouts. It was no joke.
Yeah.
You had to isolate the muscles doing the exercise. Oh. You were doing squats, and there was a technique to doing the squats. Your ass went to the ground. You flared your quads. You actually flexed your quads the entire movement.
Yeah.
When you got finishing position, you're standing up. You're squeezing your ass cheeks so hard and throwing your lot of sweeps out. You can't even dislocate your hips. That's why we all had humongous lower sweeps.
Yeah, he was the guy. He was the guy I learned iso tension from. That it wasn't just about doing the movement; it was about engaging the muscle throughout the movement, at the top, at the very bottom, and even resisting the weight on the way down. And he was the guy I learned that from. Concentration curls. Oh my God! I'll never forget a concentration curl session with him.
We all knew how to train. I see these kids; they don't know it's the fucking thing how to train.
Right.
We knew how to do all the movements; like it was almost natural for us. And you try to go up to a kid, and they're like, "Look at you!" Like, "Well, how many followers do you have?" Like, "I'm gonna listen to you."
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
We all knew how to train. He taught us. And that, you know, it was just amazing how, you know, we knew how to perform every movement, the squat, the deadlift, the bench.
The funniest thing was when you would tell Bob, even now, like, who's that guy in the picture with you? I go, that was my coach. What?
I saw on a Zoom meeting, man.
A little fat Jewish guy looks like Mario Brothers, you know. And I would say, yeah, that guy would kill you in the gym, and he trained more champions than you'll ever think about, dream about. He has more title holders than you can count in a million years. Incredible. You know, and that's another thing I've been thinking about the last 2 days again was when you really look at things, really look at things, and you count the champions. Not Weider, not Charles Glass, not any one of these people, not any one of them has a record like Bob has.
Nope.
And the only reason that nobody knows that or realizes that is because Bob didn't want that. Bob wanted it to be about us, not about him.
Mm.
And that's unbelievable. And the more I think about it, the more it just man, I feel it in my heart the last 2 days. Go ahead, Richie, I'm sorry.
And let us have our day.
Yeah.
It was always about us. Always.
Absolutely. The level of humility is doesn't really exist much these days, you know? Mm-hmm. Bob's he never needed, even to the last minute, he didn't need accolades. He didn't need the recognition. He never wanted the spotlight. I remember, John, because I had dropped out of touch with Bob, sadly, for some time. And then we got on the phone together with Bob about a year or so ago. And even then, he was just so, I was like, so humble and just like, yeah, like it was nothing. I didn't really do anything. I didn't really, you know, just like, he didn't want to take any credit. It was like, I bled my heart. I was like, man, you had such an influence on it. I wanted to thank you and just say, you know, I know I never had a chance. And now I realize the importance of the role you played in my life. And he was just like, you know, just very, like, downplayed it. He accepted it. He was humble and accepting it, you know. But man, his rewards, and it's so interesting because today we see an environment, millennials and everything, that's more, it's all about extrinsic reward. Bob Grusin was all about intrinsic. Whatever he was getting rewarded, whatever his soul was absorbing that he took into the afterlife with him, that was a reward enough. Intrinsic was all he needed. He didn't need anything outside, anything.
And it's like my phone call last week with Bob. I said, Bob, how you doing? You okay? And he didn't want it to. Hey, you know, how's Lisa? How's you? You're doing good. You know, everything going well. You know, you've been training. You know, I'm like, well, Bob, I'm concerned about you. How you doing? Oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about me. You know, I mean, right down to the very end. He didn't want it to be about him.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I want to go back for a second because, John, you asked that question. I know Richard answered it pretty well we all did in terms of what Bob taught us in terms of the training. Because, again, somebody listening would be like, well, what do you do? Again, what is specific? You know, the oil, the little advice and stuff like that. But that training to be in the gym with you and take you through an understanding. I mean, it was just like we became anatomy, physiology experts. Every single one on this call and every single champion that he helped build has more knowledge of the body, how it works, how it functions in our little finger. And again, I'm not putting down today's athletes. Than most of the greatest athletes today in the bodybuilding world, you know, have. Because, again, they're depending on someone else. We learn these things, these on a molecular level, just by osmosis being around Bob Gruskin. We became knowledgeable. And many of us have become great coaches as a result of that. And we use the same coaching strategies in many respects that Bob taught us, you know? And so that has served us along the way as well. But the knowledge, just the knowledge that he disseminated, made us all experts in many respects.
When Bob looked at you guys when you were younger and stuff and your physiques were developing, could he tell? I mean, he was obviously a good judge also, right? He could look at you guys and say, you need this, you need that, and then he would help you get there, right? Help you, you know, bring up your weak points.
Yes.
Yeah, he was right to the point. He didn't hold anything back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bob would tell you if something was weak, he would tell you, too.
I want to interrupt you, but you had a great interview. The interview with Dave Palumbo last night. I love Dave very much. Long Island boy, one of my dear friends. He talks about this great story where another mutual friend of ours, Dougie Wentz, who was a great East Coast champion himself, another guy with freaking legs. Dougie ran into it. He was another bouncer, and he ran into a bottle and got pretty messed up.
Yeah.
But anyway, Dougie was a great champion, and he introduced Bob. He brought Dave Palumbo to Bob's house. And as Dave tells the story, you know, he was there to see, you know, what kind of potential does he have? Is he going to be good? Could he make it? Is he not going to make it? And he was already pretty damn good bodybuilder. Nearly, if you know Dave Palumbo, he was nearly, you know, like a monster, like a beast. You know what I mean? He was already beastly at the time. And he's posing for Bob. He's down in front of that mirror. And I'm sure like a fraction of his body actually could be seen in the mirror, you know? And he asked, and he politely asked, Dougie, go upstairs, get yourself something to eat. Get yourself something to drink real quick, you know? And so he dismissed Dougie out of the way. And he told Dave Palumbo, he goes, go back to medical school. You need to go back to school. And Dave's like, well, why? What do you mean? He goes, I don't think you have what it takes to place high in any national show. You won't make it. Go back to school. And then the final words he said to him, he goes, prove me wrong. And Dave Palumbo was really one of the only guys that Bob Gressen, with his brutal honesty, actually proved Bob wrong, because Dave was a great champion in himself.
Yeah.
But he was honest. He was always, always honest. If he said, you know what, you got a career somewhere else, you should be doing something like you did with you, Richard. You had a career opportunity. You could have been a Mr. Olympia competitor. Look at you, you motherfucker. You're huge, right? You could have been. You had legs. Could have been a Mr. Olympia competitor. But would that have served you the way your career did in the police force?
I had to take the opportunity when it presented itself, because how many times does opportunity present itself at the right time?
Mm-hmm.
If I would have bypassed the acceptance letter from the police department, and I would have went and did the Mr. America and lived the dream, what's next? What would have been next? I mean,
right.
Would I have gotten another call from the police department? You don't know. It's that what if. I what if myself for years. I what if. Man, I wish I had just done the America, and I would have got on the job the next later, you know, a year later. But what if I beat myself up for years about the what if? I don't have any.
I'm glad you took that role, because I just hearing your voice say pull around to the window.
Plus, there's a good chance that John and I would have had to encounter you on stage at some point, and that wouldn't have been good for us.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how I skated by Jerry Scalise. I mean, you know, Tommy beat me. I skated by Jay. I never had to compete against Jerry. I never had to compete again against. I think Kacharik beat me when I was a teenager. I think when I was a teenager, everybody in the country beat me.
and yet you evolved into John Defendez, Mr. USA, one of the greatest bodybuilders that has ever lived, without question. And again, some of those defeats made you who you are, man.
There's no question. The losses, I never wanted to feel that. The pain that I felt when I was at the Suburban and my friends told me I won after the prejudging, and you know, I was standing on the side of the stage and he's right at the clipboard. He said, will the top three competitors come out on stage? I think it was Casey, Dwayne Broadway, and somebody else. And I told the guy, I'm sorry, excuse me, I made a mistake. The guy looked at the clipboard, and he says, what's your name? I said, Defendez. You're supposed to be out there. He says, I'm sorry, son, you didn't make the cut. I said, no, I won the show. My friends told me. I'm like, hey, Bobby, hey, tell him. You know, I'm like, Bobby, tell him. You're a little bad spot. So the guy goes, no, I'm sorry, son. And I stood there like Carrie. Remember Carrie in the movie? Like, yeah. You might as well have dumped the blood on me. I'm standing there like four guys. I drove 2 hours to watch three guys beat me out of the four guys that were in the class.
Wow.
And you know what? I always call that a defining moment.
Yes.
That moment, that's a moment I never wanted to feel again for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And of course, I felt it a couple weeks later when Tommy beat me. But at least I got called out and I took second. Matter of fact, I was so excited that I took second to Tommy that I had a celebration party for Tommy the next day at my house, where I brought I brought Deli Heroes over there. I had Carvel ice cream, and I celebrated Tommy's victory. I got the picture. I posted on Facebook once in a while just to remind me of that son of a bitch. He beat me. And,
you know, that is,
I've been
that
chasing
is,
that. I've been chasing that bitch. So
that is absolutely true. This is so true.
Right?
Yeah, he had a party. I'll never forget. We had Heroes and we had ice cream, and I was like, I was a bit dumbfounded. I was like, and honest to God, listen, the first time you walked into Future Man Gym with Bob Gruskin, and I was introduced to this monster. What I didn't share about that part of the story was that, you know, I've been relatively complacent. I was training hard. I was under the tutelage. I wasn't really under Bob's tutelage yet. And that was about to evolve. But I was under the tutelage of Tony Pandolfo, a great champion himself, Mr. New York, Masters, Mr. America. A great guy. He passed away a few years. God rest his soul. And so when John walked in, and the first thing that happened was I was demoralized. I'm like, this fucking guy, he's huge. He's a monster. He's like, oh, my God. And Bob introduces him at my competition. I didn't want to go back, like I said. But what it did do, it was motivating. And this was Bob's brilliance. He knew how to be so subtle about, you know, these introductions and these things were just like, you knew there was you always knew. And this is one of the things that I've worked with as a coach, very few bodybuilding athletes over the years, very selective about it. Because I know, especially today's, you know, day and age, it's like, it's just not something I want to do per se. But I've worked with very few, and certainly, you know, what I've been able to do in the past with these guys is the same thing Bob did with me, which was get them motivated, make them realize there's somebody nipping at your heels right now. You think you're training hard? There's somebody training harder. You think you're dieting hard? There's somebody dieting harder right now. And Bob introduced me to that guy, and it was the next day that was like, holy shit, I gotta up my game. And for the next 6 or 8 weeks or so, I umped that game to the point where it's just like I barely edged by John. I mean, one of the greatest bodybuilders ever lived. I barely edged by the guy. You know what I mean? As a teenager. If you look at those pictures, I think there's still a question. I might have had a couple of those judges. Well,
your legs were so superior to mine at that time. And I tell you something, and this is the God honest truth, that was 43 years ago, and I'm telling you. And,
just slap me in the face.
43 years I've been chasing this guy, and no matter what the fuck he does it better than me. And it pisses me off. You see him out there, I do a live video on Facebook. I'm like, yeah, you know. Then I watch Tom, and say, he's got fucking special effects. He's got hands. Hey, let me tell you. Special effects. Yeah, bring the lions in over here, the zebras. Yeah, it's like, you got all kind of shit going on that no matter what I do, no matter how I up my game, I'm still chasing them.
You're the guy I got to stay one step ahead of, man.
Hey, 2050, Palmetto Senior Center. I'm going down.
You guys are the witness. You guys are witnesses. This is it.
I'm going to contact Bob one way or the other. I'm going to do a seance, whatever I got to do.
Remember, if Bob is training you, he's training me too, man. I mean, it's just how it works. You know what I mean? It was like up against the other. But Bob sent me to a contest. I forget, as a teenager, and I was winning, you know, won the Teenage Metropolitan, a couple other shows. And again, he was so brilliant at helping us learn these lessons that we needed to have. He talked me into going, and I kind of knew I needed a haircut. I remember shaving my legs in the back of the car on the way to the contest, right? I put on Copper Tone. I was like Copper Tone tanning it on the way to the contest. He sent me to this contest in Connecticut. He said, yeah, you can do well. You can do well. You got to go to this contest, right? So I went with my brother, my twin brother, and my dad, and it was it, right? And one of the reasons I wanted to go, because Sergio Leiva was guest posing, right? And I don't know if it was Mr. Connecticut or what it was, but I wanted to see Sergio Leiva.
What year was that, Tom?
What's that?
What year was that?
The 77 was the Mets. So it must have been 78. It was like after the Mets. And so he got me, he talked me into going, Bob talked me into going. And I got there, and literally, like John, it was like last place. A guy named Pete Leonetti was a teenager. I think won the Teenage America.
Hard as a rock.
Hard as a freaking rock. You've never seen abs like this. I don't know what happened to Pete.
Abs and legs. He had abs and legs like
unbelievable. His back was narrow. Even today, I can recognize some of his weaknesses. Yep. But, you know, just like, I got crushed. I got completely crushed. And Bob was there, of course, and I didn't want to go back that night. And this is an interesting experience that I had with one of the athletes I worked with last year. Is I didn't want to go back that night. And Bob says, "You made a commitment. You're in the contest. You go back."
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So I went back and I faced my humiliation. You know what I mean? It was just like, it could have been done over the prejudging. I could have went out for ice cream, went into the pool and said, forget about it. But I went back that night because Bob's encouraged me to go back. He knew the lesson. He knew what we needed. We needed a humbling. He must have seen I got cocky after beating the freaking John Defenders. I mean, he was like, who would get cocky? I mean, I was like, arrogant shit. And he says, you need a humbling. You need to go get your ass kicked. And that's exactly what happened. On the upside, I got to meet Sergio Oliva, another inspiration. So between the two, it was a tremendous inspiration that made all the difference in the world going forward.
You know, what's really amazing, though, about Bob, I hear from all you guys, is, you know, he was so passionate about the sport. He took his time to help all you guys and many others. But he was always realistic about the sport and said that you guys need to also concentrate on other things, have a career. And like telling you, Tom, you got to go back to the night show. You got to face that.
Yes.
So it was like all these life lessons. And, you know, that's amazing that he was that passionate about it, but he was always encouraging you, like Richard, you know, to go for another career instead.
Mm.
You know, let me tell you a little story real quick. We went to the Region 1 in Massachusetts in the 70s. And my friend John Farina said, hey, you know, I'd love to go, you know, see you compete, you know. So I was like, you know, cool. You know, John worked out a little bit, but not really. You know, he's played baseball, had other sports, but wasn't a bodybuilder at all. So we get to the Region 1, and, you know, I trained all year for this contest. And Bob's finding out how many people are in my class. And everyone's like, hey, how many people got in your class, you know? And there were four people in my class and five trophies.
That was always a relevant question. Remember that, guys?
Yeah.
How many guys are in your class? Like,
so Bob.
And it was only three places at weddings.
Bob comes out. I'm standing backstage, you know, getting ready to pump up. This is like right before the prejudging, and Bob says turns to John. He goes, "Hey, take your shit off. I got some posing trunks here. You're gonna get in the show." And John goes, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm gonna get you in the show." I swear to God, I kid you not. He has John stripped down, put the pose trunks on, dioderming him, right? The guy is, we had to shave him down. This is an Italian guy that's hairy, backstage with a razor, electric. He has the thing on, right? He's throwing the dioderm on him. I'm sitting there going, what the hell, right? John's got the posing trunks on. Even though with the diadem, he's still got the tanning line from his shorts, right?
Right.
He's got the posing trunks with the white legs, you know, and the dioderm. He goes out there. Of course, he took fifth. He took last in the class with those five guys. He's out there. I got the picture. I post it all the time on Facebook every time I want to get back at him. And, so he comes home. He takes fifth because there's five guys. I won the show. This was a big show, too. So we go home and we go back to his house and we go in and his mother goes, oh, how did John do? He goes, oh, forget John. I took fifth. Look, I got a trophy.
Take fifth. You're not
even a bodybuilder. Yeah, but look at my trophy. I took fifth. I'm like, so then after that, it was always like, hey, have you doing your show? I won. And then John be like, yeah, I took fifth. And people going, wow, must have been a real shitty show.
John
actually looked decent. For a guy that didn't compete, he actually looked decent, though.
Yeah.
You know
what I've learned about Bob? All of the people I've met through him, through all the different gyms we used to go to, the different competitions, and he'd introduce you. And he made a point to introduce you to people and say, Richie, this is so-and-so. Richie, this is Jeff King, Joe DeAngelis, Jerry, Johnny, Tom, all these people that you've met 35 plus years ago, and we are all still a family. We all still keep in touch. Myself and Dougie Wentz were training partners years ago. We were two top teenage dogs back in the day. Dougie and I are pretty much the same age, a year apart. Never competed against each other. Always trained hard with each other. And to this day, we're still friends. And I haven't seen Dougie in over 20 years. Mm. And Joe DeAngelis, I was almost making that trip to California with Joe DeAngelis and Frankie Vassell back in the day. Then the police department called. And I spoke to Joe DeAngelis up until 2 days before he passed away. For 30 years, I've kept in touch with people. We're just a brotherhood. It's just such a big, tight, close-knit family of all the guys that Bob has introduced you to.
Yeah.
It's so much alike you.
Yeah.
We're all so much alike each other, but a little different in each other, you know, in different ways, but it's all, the same pretty much, personality-wise and sense of humor, and it's just it's incredible.
Bob would never have it. He would never put up for any of us disrespecting each other, ever. I mean,
Absolutely not.
He would turn your back on you.
You know that's the example that he set, and that example is what we followed. And quite honestly, you know, my best friends are this group of people and the people I grew up in high school with and the loyalties that we had growing up. Times have changed so much. We've come into this era of everything's instant and everybody's about themselves and me, and selfies, and that people don't understand the way we grew up, the loyalties. And if you know, I got your back, you got my back. Now it's like, I got your back while you're stabbing me in my back. You know, it's like, you know, it's a whole different mentality now, but we grew up in an era, and I'm so blessed. And not only to have Bob have been in our lives, but we grew up in an era where bodybuilding was about camaraderie, you know? We were competing against each other, but we still trained together and we cared about each other. And, you know, when you got there, you competed and you wanted to win, but at the same time, you were still just like, you know, me having Tommy over my house. I'm celebrating the guy who beat me. I mean,
Come on. What you were trying to do is fatten me up. Ice cream, cupcakes. I mean, come on. We know exactly what your ulterior motive was.
I was surprised. What surprised me is that I didn't put enough rat poison in that.
I was sick the next couple of days. Like, what are you saying?
I mean, I should have went. I'm telling you, I should have went with the strychnine. The rat poison was too weak.
I mean, it is true. I mean, when you think about the brotherhood back in those days, again, we were all of us were slightly post. You know, you talk about the, you know, and we all, who didn't grow up? John Hanson, I know you did. I know that Jerry, everyone, we all grew up in many respects early on in our bodybuilding careers, looking at those pictures from Artie Zella that used to shoot of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Franco and all those guys on the West Coast, right? And that was like a brotherhood we saw up in that Gold's Gym. And in many respects, we created this, not we, but Bob created this brotherhood on the East Coast in many respects of guys that wound up training with each other, working with each other. Jerry and I have a background. Probably your listeners would never know this, but Jerry and I used to bounce in the air. We talked about this off the air. Jerry and I used to bounce in some, like, probably the preeminent rock and roll club back in the 70s, 80s, Hammerheads, right? I mean, Long Island was the rock and roll
freaking
mecca. You know, and we were bouncing at these, like, hardcore biker and rock clubs, man. Jerry and I have some experiences together in that respect, and we were introduced by Bob, and you know, so it's that's like these personal relationships that evolved around that, and it all had to do with Bob. It all centered around him in many respects, didn't it?
Jerry, yeah. I love that picture you put on Facebook not too long ago where you had a group of guys and you all went to the Night of the Champions.
Yeah, that was probably I would say that. Well, Robbie won the first 2 years, 77. Yeah.
Robbie Robinson.
It was definitely one of them because. I mean, Quinn was only maybe 19, and Jeff wasn't that old.
Yeah.
So I think it might have been like 78. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, but it was a great fit of Konzo brothers, Dan Morrow, and Peter Neff.
Yeah.
You know, with Bob leading us all in the street of New York.
God, you mentioned Peter Neff. I forgot about Peter.
Yes.
Peter never had the greatest upper body, but God dang, did he have some legs, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was a Bob guy.
Yeah. Peter was from up there, Westchester, I think.
Yeah.
You know, another thing, too, that we forgot to mention is the exposure that Bob gave us in the magazines. I mean, you know, Muscle Up, Bodybuilder, you know, Muscle Mag International. I mean, you know, Bob was writing, wrote hundreds and hundreds of articles for all those publications, did the photography.
And Bob was the head judge with the MPC, too. People forget that.
Yeah.
At one time. People forget that.
Yeah.
But yeah, photography really helped make a lot of us. Yeah.
And you know what? Another thing, too, is we grew up at an incredible time. You know, when I was talking to my girlfriend Lisa about this the other day, is the excitement to know you're on a magazine cover or in a magazine. When you run to the store, you know, I would get the date, you know, March 8th, the magazine hits. I'd be there, the boxes are piled up. I'd say, I'm here, you get the magazine. Well, we haven't unloaded, I was unpacking the boxes and opening them up, put the magazines on the shelf. You know, I remember my first, I was promised the, Bob got me the cover of Muscle Up. There was Muscle Digest. Now, you got me the cover of Muscle Digest, right? And it was 6 months in advance. This is going to come out in February. You know, you're going to be on the cover and everything, right? And I ran to the store. I found out exactly the date it was coming out. I went there. I waited. The guy opened up the boxes. And, you know, they only had like four magazines of each magazine. And, you know, I got the magazine. And I was on the cover. My picture was about an inch and a half big, and Samir Banood had the entire cover, right? Samir Banood had the whole cover, and I was friends with Samir. I met Samir in 79. We trained at Gold's Gym in Venice, at the original Gold's Gym. I met him there. He posed for me under the skylight. We became friends. So the magazine comes out, and Samir's got the whole cover. I got this one-inch tiny picture. And then I seen it, and my heart sunk, and the inside back cover was the insert. I had inside back cover of the little pictures on the front. So I bought two copies, the other two copies. I turned it around and put it back on the rack. And I told Samir this. I posted on Facebook. I said, I'm sorry, Samir, but I turned the cover around so you actually didn't have the cover in that issue. I still had the cover. You know, and Samir's forgiven me, you know, because he knows I always tell him how awesome he is.
Yeah, he's cool. Samir Banood, Mr. Olympia. Yeah, but you remember that, Jerry? I mean, and Don, it's the first time. It could have been any magazine. I remember it was like a series called The Upcoming or something. Right?
Yep.
Rising Star,
this big of Tom Zwilliger. I'm like, yeah, I couldn't believe it. It was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
It meant the world when you had your first picture in the magazine, man.
Yeah. Hey, guys, when I was in high school, which was way back when, I think it was about 74, 75. I was one of the few people training. And the school library got, like, Muscle Mag in. And
what?
No one in the mid-70s was reading Muscle Mag. So I used to go into the library and take my notebook. I would get the magazine, take it out, and I would take it from the library. Every month, I would take the issue out, knowing that nobody ever knew that it was gone. And I remember, John, you would know this. I think the first one had Dave Draper's arm workout in it.
Dave was the bomb, man. That was not
good for me. Yeah. But, yeah, no, you would even when the Olympia was ran, I would call Goals in California to see who won. Nobody
knew. Yeah, everybody did that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Nobody knew, remember?
Monday morning,
No, it was just great showing up at shows, and you didn't know who was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the guy in the tracksuit that was lean, he was going to win the show.
You can see the face, right?
Yeah.
You know what Bob used to do? Bob used to do this thing where he'd come up behind you. And he'd, like, feel your lower back. You know what I mean? Like, he'd, like, feel your lower back. He knew. He knew as soon as he touched your lower back if you were in shape or not. You know what I mean?
Like, he would twist your back.
All I know is next week, Jerry, don't be calling me collect next week asking me for bail money when they pick you up for the magazines you stole.
Hey, John, I got to be honest. I was surprised to hear you had a girlfriend at all. I'm like, how is a woman possibly putting up with this? It's time to start ranking on each other, guys. It's starting getting boring.
No, you're talking to me? Hey, you're talking to me. You married Dawn like three times your pay scale.
Listen, it cost me a hell of a lot. I'm not going to tell you, man.
You don't have to tell me about it costing a lot. That comes with the territory.
Guys, let's wrap this up because I know we could be here all night. Let's just go down the list and go down the line and just sort of tell us what Bob meant to you. I know that's probably a difficult question, but let's just it's like one last tribute to him.
I hate to start that with so let me start again. It is interesting that I don't know until we know that the saying goes, you never know what you have until it's gone. And
right.
Honestly, I have a hard time even thinking about Bob and what he meant to me without choking up a little bit and without a tear coming to my eye, because he was just such an incredible impact on my life. I mean, I didn't even realize it until he was gone, how much of an influence and how brilliant he was and how honored I should have been and still am today of him taking any even kind of remote interest in this punk ass kid from Massapequa, Long Island. Who was I? You know what I mean? And he saw something that I didn't even see in myself. And he helped me see that. He helped me begin to create a vision. He never practiced or utilized visualization, but he helped us create a vision of something more compelling than where we were, who we were at that moment. And that is absolutely invaluable. So Bob's not only his influence, but his character, his mentorship, his training, has influenced almost everything. It goes so beyond the bodybuilding and the training and even the spirituality of it. It's just it's something that I'm honored and have really, truly been privileged to have Bob in my life, to have him interested in who I was and to help me become who I became. And he'll be missed. He'll be sorely missed. Greatly.
How about you, Richard?
Bob was like a second father to me. And over the years, his guidance, not just for myself, but for my brother Scott also. My brother Scott helped Bob as he got older.
Yes.
And he really stepped up to the plate with Bob when he had his first surgery. And Bob had a shunt put in his head. My brother was there at the hospital. I was in Florida. I just couldn't leave. I had work commitments that I couldn't get out of. My brother really stepped up to the plate and was there for Bob through all of his surgeries. Judging NAPA shows, Bob was the president of NAPA USA. My brother was there running shows with Bob, judging the shows with Bob. And all the way down to the very end, but, 35 years plus that I've known Bob, it was the Christmas cards, the birthday cards, the hello phone calls, how are you doing, the meals we spent together, just enjoying each other's time. I mean, if it wasn't for Bob, and I can speak for my brother also, we would have never made the decisions in life that brought us to be the people or the persons that we are. And the people that I've met through this man, it's just, words just can't describe it. Do I miss him? I miss him dearly. He was my Jewish daddy, and I love the man to death. He's done so much for me. Thank you is not a word that expresses how much gratitude I have for him. Thank you is just not enough. And he never took anything for granted. You could see the twinkle in his eye when you said, Bob, thank you so much for everything you've done for me. You see how it affected him. He really enjoyed to see the look of you being happy because it made him happy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I miss him terribly. I'm so sorry that he's gone. But it's the cycle of life. It is. We're all going to be gone someday.
Right. But
will anyone touch my life as much as he did? I don't think so. He's really made it, took the time to speak the words. He's really made an impact on my life. He really has. And I miss him dearly. I really do.
Hey, John, how about you?
Well, I turned on my computer and I just clicked on Facebook for a second. And I just want to show you what came up. Can you guys see that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the mirror.
Basement.
It's the famous mirror.
Yeah.
And I'm giving that mirror to Johnny Defendus here within the next couple of months.
What?
Yes.
That belongs in the Smithsonian.
Well, you want to know something? We spoke about that. We want to see if we get it in the Bodybuilding Hall of Fame because it belongs there.
That would be brilliant.
You know, that or I'm going to use it when I'm getting ready for that 2050. Because I know if I got that mirror and I just say, mirror on the wall.
No, that is an unfair advantage. No way, man. No way.
There's still magic in that mirror.
So let me say this. First, I'd like to thank Scotty Palatano, because him going in and getting the files out and sending me the files, sending us the files of our pictures throughout our life. But what was more important than the pictures, I there were pictures that Scotty sent me that were in Bob's files that not only do I not remember taking the pictures, or not only do I not, that I've never seen the pictures, but some of them I didn't remember taking because Bob always had you on the go, you know? And, you know, Bob would do really fucked up shit. Like, I remember he's in the basement, I was getting ready for the show, and he's taking pictures. And, you know, Bob would take the pictures because you had to pose really hard, and he'd have you pose for hours, and he had me pose. Then I seen him go turn around and he open up his camera. I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "Well, I'm going to put some film in now." I said, what? I thought you had film in there. He goes, "No, I just wanted you to pose so we get the water out of you, get you tight, you know?" And he had me pose for probably an hour with no film. And, you know, you want to look good for the camera, so you're hitting it hard. Oh, you know, I'm hitting that pose. And, you know, I'm trying, no, smile. No, don't grimace. No, you got to put your hand up. I know. You put your legs out so you got more of a sweep. No, you got to do that. And he's taking pictures. And I just go, I'm thinking, my God, I'm going to have the best pictures. I'm in the best shape of my life. And then he goes to put the film in. Right? And it was a trick I learned that I used that later on my guys. but what meant more to me than the pictures. And, you know, and I hope Stephanie Gruskin, his niece, gets a chance to see, you know, I know she's watched the other videos with her parents, Bob's brother. And I hope she gets to see this and really gets to see, get some insight on to see that her uncle was probably one of the greatest men who ever walked this earth and ever cared about anybody. The guy gave his heart and soul to every one of us. And what really got me with my file was I opened that file. And, you know, you don't remember back. This is going back over 40 years. And there were hundreds of letters. And I'm not joking when I say hundreds. Hundreds of letters and cards that I wrote to Bob over the span of time. And that span pretty much went from the 70s till pretty much the 90s. Because I was writing to him all the time. You know, this in the 70s. It was $5 a minute to call from Arizona to New York. So we didn't make long distance calls. We wrote letters, you know, and we mailed those letters. And it took a week to get there, whatever, you know. But I sat down the other day and I read these letters and I was crying. I had tears in my eyes and this aching in my heart, because every single letter I wrote just said, I can't believe how much you care and what you've done for me. And thank you, thank you, thank you. I have never read so many thank you letters. And I kept saying, you know, I have to win. I have to become Mr. America was my goal. Only you can help me get there. I know you can help me get there. And everything you've done has brought me to this point. And thank you, thank you, thank you. And the letters just expressed how important he was to me and how a lot of people didn't know this, but from training with Mihalik was a perfectionist. He was never good enough, and he made it where I was never good enough. He never, ever told me I was good. He never told me, you've arrived or you've done this. All those years I trained with Mihalik, almost 6 years, and what I got from Mihalik was, you know, oh, do you think you're a bodybuilder? You're a fucking skeleton with a wig. You have no muscles. Look, you look like a coat hanger in that picture. That's what Mihalik would say. You know what? And people today, and, you know, I've had a lot of people tell me he was abusive, he was this, he was that. I said, no, that's the way it was, and he was telling me the way he had to tell me. But Bob was the guy that held me together. Steve was the guy that broke me down. Bob was the guy that built me up. And he didn't build you up in a false way. He didn't bullshit you. But he was never afraid to tell you when you did good or when you looked good or hang in there, hold it together. We'll get you there. Don't worry about it. He was the voice of reason.
Yes, and he was.
He was so, when he spoke, it would give you a peace, a calmness, knowing that it's all going to be okay. You're going to get there and you're going to be in shape on that day of the show and it's all going to work out. That's how Bob was, but he wouldn't bullshit you. He would tell you exactly, and as long as you listen to him, don't worry, just listen. You got to listen to what I'm telling you. Here's what you got to do, you know? But every letter that I wrote consistently said, I need you. You hold me together. You make me believe in myself that I can do this. And, you know, at times where I don't think I'm good enough, you give me the confidence to go on, because Steve didn't do that. Steve played a part, and a very important part. But if I didn't have Bob, I would have never, ever, ever, ever won the USA. And there were so many letters after the USA, it said that right in the letter. I would have never won that show without you. God put you on this planet to help all of us, and he did his job when it came to me, and he got me there, and he allowed me to accomplish my lifelong goal. And without Bob Grusin, that wouldn't have happened. Absolutely no way that would have happened. And Bob, I'm sure you're looking down on us and you're going, well, you guys need to shut up. You need to stop talking about me. You know?
He doesn't want us
to talk about him. He doesn't. But I tell you, at the same time, I know he's feeling us right now, and he knows he did good, you know? And I hope that when he got up to the pearly gates, you know, God put his hand on him and said, you know, job well done. Well done, son. You did good, you know? And I know that's how it went.
Yeah.
I agree,
Jerry.
Well, Bob was like that angel on your shoulder. Whether you had a great day or you were in a dark place, he always assured you that everything was going to be all right. And it's funny, when Bob passed, the first one I called was my mom. My mom's 93. I actually called her at 10 at night and woke her up. And, you know, I told her Bob passed, and she was upset because, I mean, Bob was part of my family. Hold on. sorry, guys.
You feel it. You feel it, too.
He was part of my family, and I used to pick him up on a Sunday and bring him out to Sunday dinner. He loved eating at my house, and I would bring him back to the Bronx. Sometimes he would stay a weekend, and it, you know, it's hard to replace someone like that. And he was just all our lives. He touched everybody, and you know, like I wouldn't be where I am without him. I mean, this man would be up at 11, 12 o'clock at night after you finished the gym. And he would say, come over, I have to take a look at you. And you'd drive up there. And he didn't have to do this. You know, he would open the door. He would feed you. It would be 12:30 at night. Mm-hmm. And like you said, he never wanted anything. And he's going to be missed. You know, just talking to him on the phone, like John said, he would ask you how you're doing. He would never tell you how he was doing.
Yeah.
And that's it. I can't really talk much more.
You know, I just want you guys to see this. Can you see that on the screen?
Yeah.
You know, that was Bob taping my arm when I was just 16 years old. And, again, taping my arm, you know, pointing to my arm. In the 90s, the first picture was in the mid-70s. Second picture was in the 90s, when I went up to New York to judge a contest at NABBA, show. Cool. And, you know, it's just, you know, looking back on that, I remember I was just so happy I had somebody that took an interest in me and was there to help me accomplish, go after my goal. I can understand you breaking down. I've cried enough tears the last couple days. It's just looking through all the stuff over and over again. And I'm so thankful again for Richard and Scotty for getting me those files, because those memories will go all the way to the grave with me, and I'll be looking at them all the way the rest of my life, because those memories are the greatest memories of my entire life.
All right. All right, guys. Well, listen, I want to thank all of you guys for joining us for the special tribute to all you guys, and I thought it was anyway, we're all here late on a Friday night talking about them, so I appreciate you guys all taking the time to do this. Tom Terwilliger, John DeFendis, Jerry Scalise, and Richard Pelletano, I appreciate all you guys giving this tribute to Bob Gruskin, one of the real great gurus in the sport, a very special person. And this was fun, guys. I'm glad we were able to get together and share these memories, and I think Bob would appreciate it. And it was great having all you guys who were so close to him come on here and do this for us.
Thank you, John. Appreciate you, John. Appreciate you doing it for us.
Yeah, we appreciate it, John. Thank you for getting us going, man. You know, we really appreciate it. And I'm sure Bob is honored by it. Thank you.
All right. All right, guys. Well, I look forward to having you guys on the show again, hopefully one day soon. And it was great talking to all of you and great seeing everybody. And God rest Bob Gruskin's soul, right?
You got it.
Thank you, Bob.
Love you guys. All of you.
Love you, man. Love you guys. Appreciate all of you. Thanks, Rich.
Take care, guys.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to John DeFendis, Tom Terwilliger, Jerry Scalise, and Richard Pelletano for coming on and giving that really moving tribute to Bob Gruskin, who was such a great influence in the bodybuilding world. I contacted these guys just last week, and we ended up doing it late on a Friday night. So I really do appreciate it, but you could tell from the interview, of course, that they really wanted to get out there and say what they had to say as a tribute to Bob, who meant so much to them in their lives. So thanks to all those guys for coming on, and thanks also to my producer, Paul, for setting us up on Zoom, and we were able to record that. So check that out on YouTube also if you guys want to see what everybody looks like. All right, that's it for the show. We will be back next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Stay safe out there, everybody. Stay healthy, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.